we're talking about the schusim that the parents of the holy tzaddik and the Rebbe Melech and the Rebbe Bezushia had to bring into the world such remarkable neshamas. The schusim that we're told about from the Svarim HaKadoshim, besides the fact that they were tremendous Balei Tzedakah and unbelievable people, the Svarim tell us about a few things that happened in their lives that opened up a place to be able to bring in these neshamas of these great tzaddikim. And that's what we were talking about. I want at the end to say over Maisa to get us ready for Rosh Hashanah. But let's continue with what we have from the Svarim HaKadoshim regarding the parents, Rabbi Elazar Lippman, and Miral, the schus of having these neshamas. So we have other ma'isim, and this one is found in the Svarim of Ramatul Mislanim. He has very, very clear Kabbalists with all the stories. There's a ma'isa that Rabbi Elimelech and Rabbi Zushi's father, Rabbi Elazar Lippman, that he was once traveling somewhere, and there was a guy who had a Jew tied to the horse, who had a Jew. This was common sport in those days. He must have had something, whatever he had with this particular Jew, and this guy had tied the Jew to the back of the horse, and was running with this person through the street, and obviously it was a matter of time till he was going to die from these injuries. And Rabbi Elazar Lippman went over there to the guy, and he stopped him, and he begged him that he would pay a good amount of money to stop this, to put an end to this. And the guy didn't want, until finally Rabbi Elazar Lippman said that he'll give whatever he has. He could take him every ruble that he has, every single penny that he has. And finally that guy agreed, and the Jew was untied, and he was barely alive, and Rabbi Elazar Lippman, the Rebbe Melech's father, took this person home and helped him get back to health and so on. And the Jew was so grateful that he asked, you know, what could I do for you? I'm not the person of means. I can't give you back that money that you spent on to save my life. But if there's anything, what could I do for you? So Rabbi Elazar Lippman said that he didn't want any schar. He doesn't want anything. He doesn't want to be paid. This is, he did this for mitzvah, and he was happy to do it. But that person who he saved said, "Ani ekach alai oinshe ha-gehenem asher megil l'kvayda," that I will take upon myself. He said to Rabbi Elazar Lippman that if after 120, if there are any punishments for you in Gehenna, in the next world, if there are any punishments, I take those punishments upon myself. That you shouldn't have to suffer at all. And Rabbi Elazar Lippman said, okay, I'm asking to that. And they shook hands over that. You know, these things are discussed in halacha, making deals, buying and selling futures. I don't know if that's what they call it, but it's really, you know, to buy and sell. There is such a thing. It's true. It's not halacha. It's discussed. And anyway, we're not going into that right now, but it was a serious thing, and they shook hands. Some years went by. In the meantime, what happened was that this Jew who made the original deal with Rabbi Elazar Lippman, he appeared, he came to Rabbi Elazar Lippman, and who asked him, what are you doing here? And he said that he's no longer amongst the living. He's not alive anymore. He died some time ago. And he came from the Olam HaEmes, and he said that I went through my own personal Gehenna that I was doomed to suffer. And now they told me that I'm finished with my sentence, but now I have to go through your sentence of Gehenna. And I was coming to ask you, I didn't really know what Gehenna involves when I made the original agreement, and I just went through my own personal Gehenna, and I'll tell you the truth, I don't think I could take another one. So I was asking you if you could be meichel me on that, if we could work something out, you know, with that, to forget about that handshake, and if you could forgive me. Otherwise I have to return and do that second sentence. So Rabbi Elazar Lippman said that 100%, He said that he is mevater. It's 100% okay with him that he Chalili says that he doesn't want the Jew to suffer on his behalf, and he shouldn't have agreed to it in the first place, and he let him go completely. And the person then informed Rabbi Elazar Lipman that because he did that, he heard that it was the Kruz, there was a proclamation in Shemayim that said that in the Schar, because he did such a noble thing and he released this person from that agreement, and that he was prepared to suffer Gehenim so that another Jew would not have to go through Gehenim, that he's going to have two sons who will be able to pull millions of Jews out of Gehenim. That will be able to pull Jews out of Gehenim. And that's chus. The Maaseh is itself a very, very deep Maaseh. It's found in Oitzi Yisrael that I saw this. The Maaseh that you see that a person who is ready to go Gehenim, to go through Gehenim, whatever it means, even in this world, certainly, it's also true that if a person is prepared to suffer in order to help another Jew, and if a person is a vatron, if a person is able to be meichel, and so on, then that person who is able to do that, he has a tremendous koyach to be poil this midah kivyachol in Hashem, that Hashem will be mevater, Hashem will give in, Hashem will be meichel other people and help and so on. So this is another story that we find in the Svarim, the schus of the parents of the two tzaddikim, that they were zaycha to have. They were zaycha to have these sons that really during their life and even after their lives, they brought so many people out from Gehenim in this world because they gave them meaning and a feeling of greatness in this world, and even from the next world. Anytime that you makarev another Jew, anytime you work to bring another Jew back to Hashem Yisbarach, you're pulling him out of a Gehenim. Anytime you see a Jew that's going through a difficult time in his life and you help him out with a couple of dollars, you're pulling him out of Gehenim with a good word. You give a person a smile in the morning, you start off his day in a good day, you're also pulling him out of Gehenim. It's a gewalt of your kach that the person has to pull somebody out of Gehenim. Then there's another story that's with the mother of the Rabbi Elamach, the Rabbi Zusha, Meryl, that she was a tremendous tzaddikus. The Rabbi Zusha said that she was illiterate. She couldn't even read Aleph Beis. She only knew brachas and siddur and certain parts of Sefer Reni. She knew by heart. She couldn't read. The mother of the tzaddikim wasn't uncommon in those days. They didn't go to school, and it was a very common thing by the simpler people. But the Rebbe Zusha said that I can tell you this, that even though my mother couldn't read the brachas, that when she said the brachas, the Shechina was shayer in the house. The Shechina came into the house in a very powerful way. So there's a maisa that's a haunting maisa with the mother, Meryl. She was unbelievably devoted to the mitzvah of tzedakah, of helping poor people, and of hachnasas orchem, taking care of guests. But not hachnasas orchem, like hachnasas orchem, what it means nowadays when couples get together, that's not hachnasas orchem, that's socializing. I'm talking hachnasas orchem, taking Jews that didn't have a place to stay, that didn't have a place to live. So, she used to go from their town. She used to go every Friday, Thursday, Friday. She used to go to the city that was nearby, which was Tikton, which was a large city, and she went there to distribute money to poor people and to help poor people. The maaseh is that she was very well loved by the poor. And oftentimes poor people would come to their house in the village, and it happened once that there was a group of two or three aniyim, poor people that came to their house. One of them was a terrible, terrible mukishchin. He had his skin was totally burned and discolored, and he was horribly disfigured. It was something that nobody would even open the door. They were afraid of how he looked. It was a pachad. And he was covered from head to toe with open wounds and saras and blisters. It was a mashunadik, a horrible thing. And plus, nobody could even look at him. Everybody would run away. And he came with two of his chaveim, something like that. He came to the house. And it says in the Svarim that she took care of him personally and helped him with his wounds and bandaged him and put lotions on him and helped him. He was terribly sick and was scrubbing him to give him to bathe his with some of the wounds, and she took care of him over the course of 2 weeks. She was taking care of this poor person, and he was very, very grateful. And when it came time for him to leave, he gave her a bracha, and he said, "Yehi ratzon shetel di banim kamayni. I give you bracha that you should have sons like me." And she was terribly frightened and upset, you know, about such a bracha, that you should have banim kamayni. And she didn't know what to make of that bracha. And there are different versions of what happened, that she went to speak to tzaddikim. She was reassured that that was in fact something which was good, and it didn't mean that her sons were going to be deformed, but it meant that this was a hidden tzaddik, and she was being tested in such a way, and that she would have children who would help cleanse other Jews of their sins and of their disfigurations and of their tzaras and so on, which is in fact exactly what happened with the two brothers, the Rebbe of Zusha and the Rebbe of Melech. This emuna pshuta that was in the parents, and the unbelievable midas and the gutzkeit and the goodness that was in the parents, was something that became the aside of the Hasidus that later on the two brothers were going to teach and spread throughout all of Galicia among those Jews who were raised in a very simple way. According to the tradition, that these were not the only two children, the Rebbe Elimelech and the Rebbe Mezusha. In fact, there were two other brothers and a sister. The names were Reb Nosson. There was a brother, Reb Nosson, who was the Rav of Stachin. Then there was, of course, the Rebbe Mezusha, Rebbe Elimelech, and there was another brother by the name of Rebbe Avram, who it seems was a doctor, and he actually served in the army as a medical medic in the army. And then there was a sister by the name of Elka, who was married to a very chasheva, to a chasheva Talmud Chacham, the family of Talmud Chacham Bachrach, also from the city of Tikton. This is the mishpacha of the Rebbe Melech and the Rebbe Mezusha. There's a tremendous difference, and I already spoke about this last week, between the two brothers. And we see this, everybody knows, you know, you could be one family and you see two children it's like Mizrach and Marav, two children that they're brought up by the same parents, that they're very different. Even though they were great, great tzaddikim, the emphasis is that the two brothers were very different. The Rebbe Elimelech from the earliest time sat completely day and night, separate from people, learning Torah day and night. His whole countenance was very austere and very reserved and private and quiet and to himself and so on. And he spent most of his time growing up in the typical way of the Jews in those times, where they really did not have formal yeshivas. There was no basketball league either, a hockey league or anything like that. They didn't have formal yeshivas. In Lithuania at that time also, it was just starting, but really the way it was in Europe is that the Bachurim and the young men would go to learn in Shtiblich. They would learn in different shuls, wherever there was a fire that was going, so there was a little warmth. And they would learn in different Shtiblich. They didn't have really a Rashi Yeshiva and Yeshivas. That was more in Eastern Europe, that was more of a later development. In Lithuania, of course, with Volozhin and the other Yeshivas, but in Galicia, it was a later development. So the Rebbe Elimelech spent his days and his nights learning mostly Nigla. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, learning the revealed Torah. And in his teenage years, he began also to learn the Kisvei Harita, the writings of the Arizal and the Sifrei Kabbalah. And he lived a life of unbelievable precious, of unbelievable asceticism. Even this was something that would persist with him even in his even in the Hasidic period of his life. Most of his life, the Rebbe Elimelech was not a Hasid. That was a later development. As we'll see, it was really because of the influence of his brother, the Rebbe Mezusha. Most of his life, the Rebbe Elimelech led in fasting and learning and being separate from the entire community. He lived a life of unbelievable devotion to Avodas Hashem, even later on when he would become a chassid, his way of fasting and other means of tormenting, torturing his body would continue, even though all of you know that this was not the accepted way of the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov himself did not go in that way, nor did he recommend it to the Jewish people as a means of avoda. But there were some great tzaddikim, the Rebbe Reb Nachman from Breslov also, and the Rebbe Elimelech, and some other famous tzaddikim, that their way was a way of torturing the body, of refining the body. And we'll see later on that it's something we can't even understand. I mean, the way that he deprived himself and how he lived, it's pushed to, almost impossible to understand that a human being could live that way. He said once at the end of Yom Kippur that between Ne'ilah and Aleinu of Marv, he already did 400 Aveiros. And that he took upon himself 400 fasts. I mean, how do you do 400 Aveiros between? And so then the Rapshus has said that, I wish I knew those Aveiros of Rebbe, of my Rebbe's. If I could only get those Aveiros of my Rebbe, I would love to have them. We don't have our saga, but he was very, very hard on himself. And it's amazing, because when you look at his Sefer, we're going to look at his Sefer the whole year. It was a hard Sefer, the Neumann HaMelech is there. But he's much more liberal with everybody else than he was with himself. He was extremely forgiving and compassionate and loving when it came to the whole world except himself. He was very, very hard on himself. And it's a pachad. We'll see some of the stories. I don't know how many of the chlal to even say over. Some of them are such a pachad that it's hard to believe that a person with the things that he did to himself and how he tortured himself and how he saw himself, it's hard to believe. And we just don't understand it in the light of his teachings. And you see that with Rabbi Nachman too. It's very hard to understand. But these were people who were refining their bodies to such an extent that they became complete, total kalim vessels for the light of Hashem. When a Jew stood in the presence of the Rabbi Melch, he was standing as close to Hashem as possible. At any rate, this was the way of the Rabbi Reb Melech. He went to learn when he was a bar mitzvah approximately. He went to learn. He left the village and he went to learn in the city Tikhtin, that city that was nearby, and a historic meeting took place, which later on would become extremely important in the history of Hasidus. In the city of Tikhtin at that time was the great tzaddik, the Rebbe Shmelke from Nicholsburg. The Rebbe Shmelke, Rebbe Shmuel Shmelke of Nicholsburg, of course, he was the brother of the Haflah, Rebbe Pinchas Halevi Horowitz. The Rebbe Shmelke was one of the greatest Talmidei Chacham in all of Europe at the time, who had already been affected by the teachings of the Mizrisha Magid. Although he was not teaching these things openly, the Rebbe Shmelke, you remember last week we spoke about this, he was doing sort of some spy work, some secret work, bringing in young tzaddikim to the Rebbe Abert, the Mizrisha Magid. So the Rebbe of Shmelke at that time was in Tikhtin learning with his grandfather, who was the Rav over there, and the Rebbe Elimelech became very close to the Rebbe of Shmelke, who was not that much older than him, but they became very, very close. Afterwards, when the Rebbe of Shmelke left his grandfather in Tikhtin, and he went to Shinyeva. Shinyeva, many of you heard of. Shinyeva was where Rav Chaskel Shinyeva was the son of the Divrei Chaim, would be Rav. Shinyeva was an important town in Galicia. So when the Rebbe Shmelke went, before he became Rav of Nicholsburg in Moravia, he was the Rav in Shinyeva in Galicia. The Rebbe Elimelech followed him to Shinyeva. Shinyeva was already a place that was populated by many Hasidim. So this was going to be important also. In the city of Shinyeva, over there, it seems that's where the Rebbe Elimelech met his wife, the daughter of Rabbi Yaakov Margulis, who was a descendant of the Rokeach, from a famous family, and that's where he was married. And he spent some time there studying under the Rebbe of Shmelke. Eventually, when the Rebbe of Shmelke would go and become the Rav of the big city Nicholsburg, the Rebbe Elimelech stayed in touch with him, and not only did he stay in touch, but the Rebbe Shmelke was persecuted there because of his devotion to Chassidus, and the Rebbe Elimelech went there at least on one occasion to help his friend and Rebbe out. In the yeshiva in Nicholsburg, where the Rebbe of Shmelke was Rav and Rosh Yeshiva, some illustrious Talmidei Chachamim were his students. The most famous of the non-Chassidim was Rav Mordechai Benet. And of the Hasidim, the most famous was the Rebbe of Moshe Leib Sasser. Rebbe Moshe Leib Sasser would go to learn by the Rebbe of Shmelke. Now, how did the Rebbe Elimelech come to Hasidus? He wasn't raised as a misnagid. He wasn't raised by a family that were opponents to Hasidus. But still, he himself was not bechlal attached to the Derech of Baal Shem Tov. So how did that happen? So it has to do with his amazing brother, with the Rebbe of Zusha. And you see this, you know, sometimes in a family, you know, between brothers and sisters, a lot of good things. You know, a lot of times there's bad stuff, but there's a lot of good stuff too. So over here, what happened is that the Rebbe of Zusha had been spending time in Mezrich, and some of you have heard stories about the Rebbe Zusha. He didn't take care of himself in terms of his appearances. Why? How? We don't know. But he was unkempt, and he was a little bit wild looking. And what happened was is that when he came back from spending some time in Mezrich, and he went to Shiniva to see his brother, to see the Rebbe Elimelech, and when he came there, the Rebbe Elimelech was terribly embarrassed by the way that his brother looked. He looked like a schlepper, like a schnarr. That's how he looked. And he conducted himself like a schlepper. He sat in the back of the shul, and he was, you know, and he was saying some tehillim, and he was playing with children in the street, and the Rebbe Elimelech was one of the most respected young Talmid Chachamim in town, and he was embarrassed about his brother, and even though he was embarrassed, of course he still loved him. The Rebbe Elimelech had some money because of the family that he was married into. And he supported Rebbe Zusha, but he couldn't bring him into the house because he was afraid of how that would affect Shalom Bayis. So he set his brother up in a basement somewhere like that, some place, and he paid for him. And basically, the Rebbe Elimelech preferred that he not have so much to do with his brother at that time because of the way that his brother was conducting himself. And, you know, he used to walk in the streets, and Zusha, it was a strange thing. So what happened was they tried having the Rebbe Zusha be attendant in a few places, but the people couldn't stand it because he would say Tikkun Chatzos, and he was singing at night, and he was always trying to be very friendly with the people, and then he started telling them aveiros they were doing. You know, it didn't make for a good landlord-tenant relationship. So he was basically getting thrown out, and finally, the Rebbe Elimelech loved him, but he didn't know with his rebbetzin how to bring him into the house. But he prevailed upon his wife, and he brought his brother into their house, and the Rebbe Elimelech said that he realized that it's not poshut, that it wasn't stam, that over the years that they had been apart, that the Rebbe Zusha was soaring to very, very high places, even though he had this whole act on the outside of how he looked and how he acted like a simple person that wasn't learning and so on. He realized that it wasn't so poshut. Now, the first meal that the Rebbe Zusha had in his brother's house, the first fleishig meal. Now again, the Rebbe Elimelech he had a comfortable life, and the Rebbe Zusha never really had meat, except he was invited to places, you know, once in a while for Shabbos, but he really didn't have meat. So he was by his brother's table, and the this also is not going to be so good for Shalom Bayis. So the Rebbe Elimelech brings wife, and so she said, all right, we have him already. Let me treat him nicely, even though she didn't chaff at all like who the Rebbe Zusha was and how he was acting and everything. But she brought out like a nice fleishig meal, and the Rebbe Zusha said that he's not going to eat it until he sees the chalif. No, for shechting. He wants to see the knife that was used to shech the animal. So she got very, very upset. And, you know, what do you mean, my husband? You know, who are you? You don't even know how to learn. You don't know anything. You're some tehillim zug, you know. And my husband, your brother, Rav Melech is my husband, and she was very upset. The Rav Melech said to go get, to send somebody to go bring the shechit. So the shechit came, and the Rav Melech said, take out your chalif that you shechted of the knife, and show it to my brother. So the Rebbe Zusha looks at this chalif, and he makes a face. Says, "Ah, this is, you can't eat from such a chalif, such a knife. You can't eat. I can't eat from this." So the wife is a whole thing. So she took the food away. She was very upset. But he said, but Rabbi Amalek didn't understand. Like, it seemed to him that the knife was perfectly good. Okay, so Rabbi Amalek told the Sheikha, go and fix the knife, you know, sharpen and do what you have to. So that my brother will be able to have some meat. So the Sheikha goes and he comes back some while later. He worked on the knife and he shows it to the Rebbe Abzushin. Rebbe Abzushin says, this treif. So the Rebbe Amel tells him to go take it and to sharpen it more, to work on the knife. So finally, this happened 2 or 3 times, and the Sheikhet, by this point, the Sheikhet never had such a mice. He was trusted by everybody in town, and he was very broken hearted about the whole thing, and he was embarrassed, and he was crying, and finally, after a few times, he came back to the Rebbe Abzushi, and he showed the knife, and the Rebbe Abzushi said that the knife is good, you could go now Shecht with this knife. So, after the Sheikhet left, So the Rabbi Lamelch said, "Look, you know," he says, "Zusha, you could pull the wool over the Sheikhet's eyes, but you can't fool me. There's nothing wrong with that knife. I don't understand what you were doing over there. I saw that knife, and the Sheikhet is a big Eilach Yid, is a big God fearing Jew, and I don't understand why did you make him change the chalafs? Why did he? What was wrong with the knife?" So the Rabbi Zusha said, "Oh, I didn't know. There was nothing at all wrong with the knife." He said, the knife was beautiful. It was perfect. The Sheikhet was a Balgaiva. Nobody ever put him in his place in his life. As he said, it was the Sheikhet that was treif. I had no problem with the knife at all. It was beautiful. But the Sheikhet I couldn't stand because he was always so proud. He's considered the biggest Chamaschash of a Sheikhet in the whole town. And nobody ever questioned him. And I saw that he was too confident in who he was. And because of that, his gaiva, his conceit, is infused into the animals that he shechs, and who could eat an animal that's such a balgaiva, like these cows that are being brought to the Jews of this town? So I couldn't eat such a thing with such gaiva. And he says, the Baruch Shalom despises gaiva. And what happened was that after he was embarrassed and humiliated and went back 2 or 3 times, he became tzibrochen and his heart broke and he did tshuva and he davened with all of his heart. Last time he went back to his place, he was davening with all of his heart that he should be zeicha, that his shechita should be kosher, and that the knife should be acceptable, and it should be okay. And then when he came back, it wasn't the knife that was any different. The knife was always good, but the yid, the sheikh, was gewaldig. The sheikh was a different sheikh. The Rebbe Elimelech, said that, I want you to take me now to Mizrach Magid to teach me what it means to be a Shemayim, to take away from me my gaiva, as if the Rebbe Melch had any gaiva. But he says, I also need to be changed, not just the Sheikh, I also want to be changed. So that was the decision, and even though the Rebbe was not pleased and the family was not pleased, the Rebbe Reb Zusha and the Rebbe Reb Melech would go together to Mizrach Magid to learn Chassidus. The story is told, and it's a very famous story, and I'm sure that many of you, that many of you have heard this, that during the time that they were together, even though the Rebbe Melech knew that his brother was in higher worlds, still it disturbed him that the Rebbe Zushi used to just walk around, like thinking, or talking to himself, and saying Tehillim. And it bothered him that he's not sitting in Bis Medrash and learning and sitting in the Gemara and spending his time learning. It bothered him a great deal, and he didn't understand, what's there to think of? What are you thinking about the whole day? And it bothered the Rebbe Melch very much. So one day, we're told, the Rebbe Melech confronted his brother, and he said to him, Zusha, what do you walk around the whole day mumbling and talking? And okay, I also say Tillim, but how much Tillim? And what do you do all day? So why aren't you learning? What's the matter with you? So this is the answer that the Rebbe Zusha gave. I'm sure many of you have heard this. He answered with a very, very profound marshal. Whenever you learn anything from the Rebbe Zusha, you have to be very careful, because the same way that he himself was disguised as a simple person, and he made himself like he was nobody, even though the Balatanya said he was the deepest Jew on earth, He made himself like he was nothing. So too in the Torah's Me'orah B'Zushi, when you hear the Torah, you're not quite sure, like, what is that? But if you learn the Torah, there are usually 2-3 lines. And we'll learn some of the Torahs. When you learn the Torahs of Rebbe B'Zushi and Yichaz them over, Yichaz them over, then you see that they're the most unbelievable Torahs. You can write books on the Torahs and Rebbe B'Zushi. You can write Svarim on those few lines. So this is a famous marshal that the Rebbe B'Zushi told the Rabbi Elimelech. And according to the legend, according to the Svarim, this is what ultimately turned the heart of the Rebbe Melech to turn his heart around and opened him up to Chassidus. He said, the Rebbe Zusha told the Maaseh that there was in a certain kingdom there was a great and very wise king that was very, very loved by the entire kingdom. And in that kingdom, at a great distance from the capital, from the palace, there was a wealthy farmer whose love for the king was bligvul, was infinite love for the king. So there's nothing that this farmer wanted more than to be able to live closer to the king and to bask in the radiance and the glory of the king. So what did he do? It was a tremendous trip, and he decided that he would sell his farm, which was his livelihood. He would sell his farm. He would use the money to go on this very long journey and to pay for some living expenses with the hope that he would eventually be able to get some sort of a job in the palace. And if he would get a job in the palace, then he would hopefully be closer to the king, and he would be able to, and he'd be able to see the king once in a while, if not to speak to him, but to see the king. So sure enough, he went for a job interview. He was a very chashuv person and a talented person, and he received the job to be the one who was responsible for heating the palace. Now, in those days, heating a palace did not mean with a thermostat or with a boiler. It was an extremely, extremely complicated job because everything was with furnaces and with fire and with the coals and with the wood and so on, and it had to be kept at a certain temperature, and it was not an easy job. It was considered to be one of the most difficult and one of the least dignified types of work that a person could have if you're going to be in the palace. It was with coals and filth and schmutz and so on. But he had the job in the palace, and this is what he wanted. He wanted to work for the king. That did not mean that he would see the king or speak to the king, or that he was allowed into the royal chamber, but still he felt good knowing that he was in the same palace, and when there was a special event or a ceremony, once in a while he would be able to see from far away. It was a delight that he had to be in the palace, even though it meant that he gave up everything else in his life. Now, over the course of the winter, the king, who was very, very kind, the king noticed that he had never had such a wonderful winter as far as the heat, how wonderful it was, always warm, and it was regulated in such a terrific way. Yeah, I guess it was a gesinnte winter. Right, you remember? So I guess that's what it must have meant back then. So it was a wonderful experience, and he was very pleased, and he asked one of the ministers, "What's going on? I never had such a terrific, warm palace, and everything was wonderful. What happened this year?" So they said, "You know, it happened that we had a guy that came to interview. He came from very far away. He came for the interview. He seemed like a good guy. We took him for the job. He works mamish like a dog day and night. So that your majesty should be comfortable." The king was very, very impressed with this, and he said, I would like to meet him. I would like to thank him for the wonderful job that he's doing." So the minister went and told the farmer, now the heating specialist, and he couldn't believe it. This is the day he's waiting for. He was so excited, and he went trembling. He went into the royal chamber to meet the king, and the king said to him, I want to thank you, and it was wonderful, and they see that you're very, very devoted, and because of that, I'm granting you a request. Tell me, what is it that you want? What is it that I could give you? And if it's something which I feel is within reason, I'd be happy to reward you. So the farmer said, The truth is, Your Majesty, the only reason that I came here, I really don't know much about this, but the reason that I came here, and my greatest dream, my greatest wish, is that I should be able to see the King whenever I feel like seeing His Royal Majesty. So the King was thinking, it's not so simple. After all, it's a poshut mensch, a simple person, and it doesn't befit the King to be in the presence of poshut mensch, of simple people, and he's not a scholar or a sage that he should be among the ministers of the King to be able to stand around and be in the royal chamber and so on. So the King, however, he was kind-hearted and he did appreciate the job that was done. So the King said to the farmer, "Look, what you're asking for is not so poshut. However, no, you'll excuse me, but you're not a scholar or anything, and it would not befit the kingdom to have a person like you in the inner circle. However, I'll give you a different etzah. Above the royal chamber, where I see people all day and where I study and so on, above the royal chamber, there's a tiny little cubicle, and there's like a little tapestry or something. There's a little hole over there, and we'll make for you a hole. There is a hole. You can go up there any time that you want. You can't come over here, but you can go up there any time that you want, and through that tiny little hole, you can look in to see what's doing in the world chamber. You could watch the goings and comings of all the ministers and kings and so on. You could watch through that tiny little hole, and that's the best I could do for you." So the farmer turned plumber, whatever, was thrilled. It was the best he could do, and he would go there, every day, a couple of times, and he would take a look, and he would see the pageantry in the world, and it's Givaldi. Now, one time it happened that after he was working with the fire and the furnace and so on, he went to his little spot up on top there to take a look, we'll see what's doing. And when he went up there, so he found the Ben Melech, he found the prince in his spot, looking through the tiny little hole. He found the prince over there. And he asked the prince, "What brings you here? What are you doing here?" So he said that my father has driven me away from him. There was a problem between us, and I wasn't careful with how I said something, and I long for him as well, and I feel terrible that I'm not part of things anymore. So I know about this spot of yours, and I came to be able to see my father, to see the King. So the farmer said, Ben Melech, he said to him, "Prince so-and-so," he said, "it's hard for me to believe. I thought you're supposed to be so smart and you're such a chosh of a person. In my eyes," he said, "your mom is a fool, and it doesn't become a person like you." He said, "Look, I am a simple farmer. I am not learned. I don't know anything about royalty. And therefore it's understandable that a person like me doesn't deserve to be in the presence of the King, and I'm unworthy. And I have no other way in my life to experience the King's splendor and glory other than using this tiny little hole up in my cubicle in the ceiling." He says, "But you're an educated person. You're a refined person. You belong next to the King. You belong by his side, and to be able to see him and to be with him every single moment of the day. But in order for you to do that, be careful with how you act from now on, and be careful with what you say, that you should be in your rightful place next to the King." So that was the story. And then the Rebbe of Zusha said to his brother, after he told the Rebbe Elimelech this story, the Rebbe of Zusha said, "Listen," he said, "Melech," he said, "you know me," he said, the Rebbe of Zusha never said me or I, he always said Zusha. He said that, Zusha is a total Amharetz. He said, Zusha doesn't know how to learn. I could barely read a sefer. I could barely read a chumash. That wasn't true, but he used to talk like that. He said, "I don't know how to learn. I don't have any seichel. I'm totally without any understanding. So therefore, my avodas Hashem, my avoda that I, the way that I serve Hashem, is with an avodas eved. You could ask questions all day about why I go here and why I do that and what am I mumbling and where am I going. I do what I do to be able to have." To be able to have my little way of taking a glimpse at the King. That's the way that's what was given to me, and that's what I'm able to do. But you, he said, He said, but you, you're a lamdan, you're a talmid chacham, you're an intelligent person, you're a refined and royal person. If you would be careful with what you do and what you say and what you think, then you don't have to. You, a person like you, you don't have to be like me. You don't have to sit in the back saying, you know, just saying a couple of kippel chetelim and wandering around the streets of the world. You could be mamish next to the king. You could be next to the king. I have to do what I have to do. This is the way that I serve Hashem, from my little cubicle of, you know, peeking through the crack, and to have a little bit of a shaykhus, a connection to the Rebbeinu Shalom. But your avodas Hashem, your avodas Hashem, it does not have to be that way, and it shouldn't be that way. It should be an avodas Hashem with godless. And after that, that's what we're told, is that the Rebbe Elimelech, that was the final stage of the decision to go and to see the Mezuzah Magid, and then ultimately the rest, of course, is history. That Ma'aseh B'chlal, one can learn a great deal. I don't want to go into it right now. I want to tell you Ma'aseh for Rosh Hashanah, and then we're going to prepare for the next stage of our discussion, which is the Golus that the two of them conducted. Everybody who ever heard about the Rebbe Revolution of Rebbe Elimelech knows that they feared Golus, that they went away. Exactly what point in time that happened, we'll discuss in Mitzvah next time. But that the two of them, like other tzaddikim in those days, like some tzaddikim, before they moved on to the level where they felt that they could lead other Jews, they wandered from place to place, disguised as simple people. The gullus of all the tzaddikim, the Vilna Gaon did that as well. The gullus of the Rebbe Elimelech and the Rebbe Bezushim, which has to do with the gullus of the Shechina, which we'll talk about. The Shechina is in gullus, and the tzaddikim in gullus. We'll talk about that in Mitzvah next time. Of all the tzaddikim that feared Golus, that conducted themselves in this way, the most famous Golus is with the two brothers that traveled together. And that's why we have, Baruch Hashem, some stories, because the Rebbe Melch told over some of the things that he saw by his brother, by the Rebbe Bezushia, and the Rebbe Bezushia said over some things that he saw by the Rebbe Melech. So neither of them spoke about themselves, but they did speak about each other. So that's why it was zeicha to have some stories about what happened when the two brothers went, went in Golus. Before we get to that, because in order to prepare for that, we're going to learn two Torahs in the Neimel HaMelech. We'll learn two short Torahs in the Neimel HaMelech to just get a little bit of an insight into the Inyan of Golus and by Tzaddik and by the Shechina, and why the Rebbe HaMelech held so strongly by this Inyan of going into Golus. But before, I wanted to tell a story for Yom Neroim. We're not going to have a Shia now until it's going to be next week. I have to speak, so I'm going to be away. So before it's some Gedalia, but the time is going to, I have to be someplace anyway by like 9 o'clock. So I don't think it's going to work out next week. So the next Shia that we're going to have is going to be October 20th. It's already Yom Kippur Sukkot, so it's going to be October 20th. So I wanted to tell you a Maisa from the Rebbe Amalek that I saw last night. It happened one year that the Rebbe Elimelech, throughout the entire month of Elul, if you remind me to tell the Ma'aseh over to the whole Olam sometime during the Menorah, I want to tell over there. It's just for our Chaburah to begin, that for the entire month of Elul, the Rebbe Elimelech was like totally out of it. It wasn't just pshat that they didn't see in him the usual avoida, but he was actually, he looked like he was depressed. He looked like he just wasn't into things at all. And this continued through the week of Slichus. And they didn't know what to do. People didn't know what to do. They tried talking to him. Nothing helped. To the point that by Erev Rosh Hashanah, he simply wasn't speaking to anybody. He just stopped talking to anyone. And it was on the night of Rosh Hashanah, when everybody came to shul to daven, he kemat, it was impossible for him it was so hard for him to just to stand up, to be able to daven. And he said the davening very, very quickly. He davened very quickly. Usually, like I said the other night, like I said last week, Rosh Hashanah davening, the night of Rosh Hashanah davening, but tzaddikim was a very, very big avoid. The Rebbe Elimelech just... it just went quickly, and he went home. And the Olam obviously was extremely, extremely sebrochen. Everybody was very broken by this. The next morning came Shachris, and the Rebbe Melech walked in also with his head down at the shul and put on his talus like a regular person, but nothing. Now, the custom of the Rebbe Melech is that he davened all the tefillahs of Rosh Hashanah both days, and all the tefillahs of Yom Kippur. So that meant he would start by Pesukah Dezirman, he would do the Shachris and Musaf and Minch and so on. So The Rebbe Melech put on his talus and he stood up by the, he could barely get to the Amud. They had to pull him to come to the Amud. He was so out of it. And he started Pesukah Dezimra. And the Bechlal wasn't the way that he normally davened. He was saying the davening fast like a regular person. Finally, when he came to the Pasuk in Mizmor Shir Chanukah Zabayis Al David, the Pasuk, Pitachta Saki V'Ta'azreini Simcha, Hashem, you removed, you opened up my sackcloth, the sackcloth, and you strengthened me with joy, with gladness, with joy. So that, the Rebbe Melech stopped, and he started saying that a few times, Pitachta Saki V'Ta'azreini Simcha, and then he started singing it. For around the half hour, he was singing that pasuk b'tach t'saki v'tazreni simcha, and then he went into a dveikus and he took the whole oilum and they were dancing for a few hours in that pasuk b'tach t'saki v'tazreni simcha, and then the davening, he blew the shofar, the davening was unbelievable the whole day, and then there was only a little bit of time to eat the meal before shkia, and the meal and everything was meridik. Then the second day the davening was again lichtig, unbelievable davening the second day. Then by the second day, the meal, lunch, which was already late afternoon, but it was the meal. So there were many Hasidim that came to eat together with the Rebbe, and the Rebbe gave out shirayim, and he gave out wine to the Hasidim. And it was Ketoiv Lev HaMelech B'Yayin. The Rebbe HaMelech was in a very illuminated state, and one of the elder Hasidim got up the nerve to ask Rebbe. There are two things we don't understand. The first we don't understand is, what was the whole month of Elul such sadness and brokenness the whole month until Lel Rosh Hashanah? And then we don't understand what changed, what happened by Pesukei Dezimra Rosh Hashanah morning, the first day, yesterday morning, what happened? So listen to this, mate. Listen to what the Rebbe Melech said. He said that when it came to the month of Elul, I saw that the Satan, the evil one, had two huge sacks, bags, filled with the Averis, filled with the sins of the Jewish people from the entire year. But huge, huge sacks that he was schlepping around. They were so big, the Rebbe HaMelech said, that they were from earth to the Kisei HaKavod, to the throne of Hashem's glory. They were filled with Jewish sins from this past year. And the whole month of Elul went by, and I tried all that I could try, and the Jews all over the world were davening, and Slichas also went by, the whole week of Slichas, and Erev Rosh Hashanah, and the night of Rosh Hashanah, and I saw that with all of the davening of Jews and my efforts throughout the entire Elul, and Slichas, and the night of Rosh Hashanah, I saw that after all of that, I saw that the sacks were still huge from earth to heaven, with sins, filled with sins of Klai Yisrael during the past year. And then what happened was, I had a pachad, I was overcome, I was gripped with terror and with fear, that by the morning of Rosh Hashanah, it became clear to me that during the coming year, there was going to be a year of devastation, of destruction, where the largest part of the Jews of the world were going to be killed, were going to die. And I had nothing, there was nothing that I could do. And the last thing that I saw was Rosh Hashanah morning. I saw that the evil one, the Satan, came, he schlepped these two huge sacks to the Rabbanu Shalom, to the Kisei HaKavod, Hashem's throne. And the Satan announced, these are the Averis of the Jewish people, of your children from the past year. Take a look. And the Rabbanu Shalom, so the Rebbe Melech said that I was begging and crying not to look, but the Rebbe Shalom said, "No, ain't l'dayin elamasha enev reis. A judge has to see what happened, to look over, to see the case, and to take a look. Yoshir is Yosh. In the world of truth, everything is true." So the Rebbe Melech said that Hashem told the Satan to bring the two bigs over to him, and he said, "Open up the sacks and let's see." So the Satan reached in. He was very happy. The evil one, this is his tachlis. This is avoda. So he was very happy, and he opened up the first sack, and he reached in to pull out the first Aveira, and it was a lichtige, shining mitzvah. It was a beautiful mitzvah. So he pulled out another Aveira, it was a mitzvah. He pulled out another Aveira, it was a mitzvah. He started screaming, and then he went to the second. He pushed that bag away, and he went to the second bag. He opened it up, and he started pulling out with both hands. He started pulling out the Satan and Malacham Avos. Started pulling out Averis. Every Averis that he pulled out was mitzvahs. The whole place was shining. He said the highest place was shining with the mitzvahs. The Satan starts to scream. The Rebbe Melech said the Satan starts to scream and yell, Ganovim, Ganovim, they're Ganovim. Somebody's a Ganov. He says, I swear to you, Rebbe Shalom, that I brought these two sacks. I'm collecting the whole year of Averis, I swear this was filled. And some Ganav came over here, and somebody, I don't know what happened, somebody switched their Averis with mitzvahs. So the Baruch Shalom was laughing, and he says, Malach HaMavis, he said, you don't even know the Gemara in Yuma. You're Malach HaMavis, Amalach Basti, you're Malach. The Gemara in Yuma says that Jews who are broken hearted, they do tshuva mi'ahava, when you do tshuva from love, then all the Averis are changed into mitzvahs. Every Aver is transformed into a mitzvah. He says, and that was exactly the moment when that happened, was when I was at the pasuk of Pitachta Saki, you opened my sack, V'ta'azreini Simcha, and you strengthened me with joy. That was the pasuk. Pitachta Saki, V'ta'azreini Simcha. That's the tefillah that all of us have coming into the Yom Leroyim. That we're afraid if we think about Chas V'Shalom, that for each and every one of us, God forbid, or at least I shouldn't say for each and for myself, that we have these peklach, and the samach mem, the other side, is collecting all year, whatever that means. Obviously, in ruchnis, it means something that it's not a physical bag that you could buy in a hardware store, but there's something that's filled with our avayers, and the whole union of this time of the year is somehow. That we have this kayach, especially the first night of Rosh Hashanah, the first night of Rosh Hashanah, and when a person, as I've been talking about all this past week in shul, and I'm going to continue talking about, there are no new themes for the high holiday, or what they call holy days, holiday. There are no new themes. It's the same theme from thousands of years, tshuva, tefillah, tzedakah, it's the same themes. Until we get it right, I'm not changing the theme. We have to work on these themes, on the theme of Rosh Hashanah. So these are peklach that the Satan is holding, and he has them shut tight, God forbid, with our avayers. When I saw this mice last night, I myself wanted to call up everybody, and that we should do a little bit of a rikud. I had such a simcha from this story, and there's such a hope that if the Baruch Shalom helps us, that we should open up our hearts to other Jews and be forgiving and be good-hearted and to let go of our kapedus and tainus. Everybody has so forget about. The Satan walks around with packages filled with Averis, and you and I walk around with peklach filled with tainus. Peklach, mamish peklach. They're also from earth to the Kisa HaKavod, about what this person said about me, what this person thinks about me, what this person did to me, and we used to be friends, we'll never be friends, all these mice, all the akpadis, all of these different things, that the heart is closed and the sack is shut closed, God forbid. Petach the saki v'tazreini simcha, that each and every one of us, it's in Lashon Yochid, it's in the singular, that we should be zoicha, that if we try to open ourselves up and open our hearts up and to be people who are caring and forgiving and are prepared to overlook those things, then as we learned and I spoke about over Shabbos, especially in the morning in Shal Shudas, that the Kodesh Baruch Hu, when he sees that a Jew is a Jew who is Pitach Tesaki type of a Jew, that he doesn't hold on to everybody's affairs, that he doesn't hold on to every word that a person said to hurt him. It's an amazing thing. You can't remember Rashi from yesterday, but you can remember something that someone told you 25, 30 years ago. You can remember something. I had a conversation with somebody last week that there was an older couple. It's an older couple, not from here, from an older couple from Queens. And I was talking, the wife called me up, that the husband's a whole miser. I want to say, listen, why don't you guys just work it out? You've been married for over 50 years. I mean, it doesn't pay, You have so much things that you have between you. So the bottom line is that 2 weeks after they were married, this is what it was. So I'm asking him, because she said to me, he said, did this, and he said, she did that. And I feel funny, because they're old enough to be my parents. I was going to say grandparents, but I'm not holding by that anymore, I think just parents. So they're old enough to be my parents, and I feel funny, what am I, excuse me, I'm a little pish, what am I getting involved, in the older people, I don't. So what was it? So it turns out like this. Listen to this. A week after Sheva Brachas, they only married 2 weeks, he said to her, I should have never married you. She said, I was complaining about something. He said, I should have never married you. For 50 years, that's eating away at her heart. 50 years, she never said to him. But that's what's, so she's been saying for 50 years, she doesn't like the way that he does this and doesn't like that, and he doesn't make enough of money, and he doesn't. But really, really, it's from a week after Sheva Brachas. And I said, no, Baruch Hashem, you remember so far back? You know, this is almost like before there were cars, you know? and she said, and he's...
No television,
right? Not even Uncle Milty. And he said to her, Aloshim, like, I should never have married you. And she didn't say, you know, she didn't... they're living all these years, whatever, they have a marriage. But she never, ever, ever let go of that. And she felt all the years that she's living with a person who be'emes, didn't want to be married to her, to begin with. And I was sitting there talking to him, and I said, and he says, I don't know what you're talking about. I never said that. I don't know what you're talking about. She said, you never said that? Don't you remember we came back from, your mother was on Thursday, and she said the street, it was a place in Brooklyn, and where they were, and exactly what happened in the time. He said, I don't remember. We came. I remember we were by my mother. We came back. We had an argument. No, you said to me. You said that you wished that you. He said, I don't know. I didn't mean that. If I said it, I didn't mean it. I love you. I'm happy with you all these years. Why do you have that? Why do you think such a thing? If I didn't want to be married to you, so you think I would have stayed? And we have both some children and grandchildren. I would have stayed married to you all the years. And she's crying. She would never saw such bechiyah, sobbing. It was rachmanis to see. And I said, you know, you should have told him you were upset about that. You should have told him it bothered you, you know. So he said, wow. She's carrying it on her heart 50 years. It's sad because, you know why? Because he was happy all the years, and she was only able to have just a certain amount of happiness, but it always was short, her happiness. Because whenever she was happy, just when it was getting to be that place where your cup is full, she felt that he didn't want to be married to her. And you know, it wasn't like nowadays everybody talks about communicating, you know, communicating. You know, what was communicating in those days was, you know, pass the ketchup. What was communicating? It was communicating, like, you know, like you ask my parents, do you feel that you're good communicators? Like you ask my parents, and my father wouldn't even answer. That's how communicating wouldn't answer. He said, what? Never even answer you. So I was thinking of a bunch of them. I was thinking about this ma'aser from the Rebbe Melech. Pitach desaki, Rebbe Shalom, help us to open those pekulach. That we shouldn't hold in things that hurt and upset, and we should be emes and real, and we should be good with each other. And in that schus, you see that it works. When Jews open up their pekulach, that the Rebbe Shalom will change everything in those pekulach from aveiros to mitzvahs. So when the evil one, Rosh Hashanah, comes and he tries to take out a mitzvah, the Rebbe Shalom is going to laugh and say, when he tries to take out an aveira, the Rebbe Shalom is going to laugh and say, aveiros, I only see mitzvahs. When Jews do tshuva, the Rebbe Shalom says, only achtoi v'chesed, only mitzvahs and masim tevim. We should be zeichen, tibin echtov, v'sifn shal tzedik.